Today, who really benefits from high home prices? Updated. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Many would accept that house prices in the major Australian centres are too high. Whether you use a measure of price to income, loan value to income, or price to GDP, they are all above long-term trends and higher than in most other countries. Indeed, in Sydney and Melbourne, they are arguably more than 30% higher than they should be. So today, we update our thoughts on this critical topic and identify the winners and losers. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. Here is the link, and it's also in the comments below. Ultra-low interest rates currently make large loans affordable for many households. Yet overall, household debt is as high as it's ever been, and mortgage stress, even at these low interest rates, is also running hot. Banking regulators are concerned about systemic risks from over-generous underwriting criteria, and they've been lifting capital ratios to try to improve financial stability, with a focus on the fast-growing investment sector and underscoring the need for lenders to consider loan serviceability. The Royal Commission also uncovered poor lending practice and the potential for some households to be sitting on unsuitable loans. In many countries around the world, house prices are also high. So, from New Zealand to the UK, regulators are taking steps to try to limit systemic risks. These rises are partially being driven by global movements of capital, ultra-low interest rates, and quantitative easing, plus the finance sector's ability to magic loans from thin air if there are borrowers willing to borrow. But now interest rates are rising in the USA and Europe, creating more pressure on households just as prices are beginning to wane. Locally, of course, home prices are now sliding in many centres, and we expect more in the months ahead. However, let's think about who benefits from high and rising prices. First, anyone who currently holds property, and that is about two-thirds of all households in Australia, will like the on-paper capital gains. This flows through to becoming an important element in building future wealth. And in addition, refinancing is up currently, and we see some households crystallising some of their on-paper gains for holidays, a new car, or other purposes, helping to stimulate retail activity. An RBA research paper suggests that low-income households have a greater propensity to purchase a new vehicle following rise in household wealth than high-income households. We also see significant intergenerational wealth transfer as mums and dads draw out equity to help their kids buy into the overinflated market. Indeed, we think the Bank of Mum and Dad is now a top 10 lender in Australia, as we discussed recently. Those holding investment property also enjoy tax concessions on interest and other costs, and also on capital appreciation. Rising wealth generally supports the feel-good factor and consumer confidence, though currently this is a bit wonky as prices fall, rental streams tighten, and interest rates rise. Higher values stimulate more transactions, which creates more momentum, but the reverse is also true. Now, the one-third of households who are not property active consist of those renting and those living with family, friends, or in other arrangements. Their confidence levels are lower, and they are not gaining from rising house prices. A relatively small proportion of these are actively seeking to buy, and they are finding the gradient becoming ever more challenging, as saving for a deposit is becoming harder, lending criteria are tightening, and income growth is slowing. We've previously noted that a rising number of first-time buyers have switched directly to the investment sector to get into the market, although this is now slowing a bit. Generally, younger households are yet to get on the housing escalator, whilst older generations have clearly benefited from sustained house price growth, even if more are now taking mortgages into retirement. This has the potential to become a significant intergenerational issue. But overall, the wealth effect of rising property is an umbrella which spreads widely. The sheer weight of numbers indicate that there are more winners than losers. So no surprise then that many politicians will seek to bathe in the reflected glory of rising values whilst paying lip service to housing affordability issues. They will also start to panic if prices fall too far, too fast. And there are other winners too. For states where property stamp duty exists, the larger the transaction value and volume, the higher the income. For example, New South Wales in the year 2016-17 added $9.7 billion to coffers thanks to stamp duties, which is around 31.6% of the total revenue of $30.7 billion. But now transfer duty revenue over the 3 years to 2021 has been revised down by $5.5 billion, according to the latest state budget papers. Optimistically, they are forecasting a significant rise in property values down the track. And the higher the price, the larger the income. Of course, the tax take funds locally provided services, so ultimately residents benefit. But clearly, they have an interest in keeping prices high. And the banks also benefit because rising house prices gives them the capacity to lend larger loans at lower risk, and which in turn, of course, allows house prices to run higher again. And they've benefited from relatively benign capital requirements and funding, thus growing their balance sheet and shareholder returns. Whilst recent returns have been pretty impressive, future returns may be lower, thanks to changes in capital ratios, and especially if housing lending continues to moderate. On the other hand, their appetite to lend to productive business and commercial sector borrowers is tempered by higher risks and more demanding capital requirements. The relative priority of debt to housing as opposed to productive lending to business is an important issue, and whilst higher house prices can flow through to economic growth in the GDP numbers, it is mostly illusory. The truth is, lending needs to be redirected to productive purposes, not just to inflate home prices. And finally, building companies can benefit from land banks they hold and development projects, despite high local authority charges. But we also note that some banks are now winding back their willingness to lend to the construction industry because of potentially rising risks. And some banks have black lists of postcodes where they will not lend, especially for newly constructed high-rise blocks. And the real estate sector, of course, benefits thanks to high transaction volumes and larger commissions. Mortgage brokers also enjoy volume and transaction-related income. Even retailers, with a focus on home furnishings and fittings, are buoyant. But all of these sectors are now under pressure as momentum ebbs. So standing back, almost everyone appears to benefit from higher prices. That is, apart from the one-third and rising of households renting, who tend to have lower incomes and reside in lower socioeconomic groups. But is it really a free kick for the rest? Well, for as long as the music continues to play, it almost is. The question now is, what happens as prices continue to fall? Remember that during the GFC, Northern Hemisphere prices fell in some places by up to 40%, and several banks collapsed. Though since then, prices in the US, Ireland and the UK have started to recover. Given our exposure to housing, there will be profound impacts on households, banks and the broader economy if values fall significantly. Yet, that looks like where we are headed. Underlying all this is the fact that we've moved away from seeing housing as something which provides shelter and somewhere to live, to seeing it as just another investment asset class. This is probably an irreversible process and part of what's called the financialization of society, given the perceived benefits to the economy and households. But we question whether the consequences are fully understood. And finally today, mark your diary, the next DFA live stream event will be on Tuesday the 21st of August at 8 p.m. Sydney time. I'll be providing some more information shortly about the event, but it is already scheduled on the channel if you want to set a reminder. And feel free to send questions in to me beforehand. If you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. The link is in the comment section below. If you like what you've heard here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. If you like what you've heard here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. If you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.